This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour number two, Sharp Money, live from the D in downtown Las Vegas. Jared Smith, Dustin Sweetelson, hanging out with you for the next 2 hours. Very excited to talk to Landry Locker in just a few moments. Host of The Locker Room, covers all things Texans. But before we do that, Dustin, good thing just to kind of go over what we've talked about in this first hour leading into what we will talk about with Landry. Houston Texans, currently the favorite to win the AFC South. They are odds on to make the playoffs. Everything is just positive. And like, you can't really find a lot of negative storylines from Houston this offseason, but maybe just a little bit too overpriced after what was an unbelievable rookie year from CJ Stroud.
Well, that is precisely why I'm cautious about going in on the Texans the way a lot of other people have. And I'm not blaming anyone. I'm just one of those people that gets very nervous I'm nervous about how much I love the Eagles. I'd be nervous that everyone else loves the Texans as much as I do, because here's the deal, and we'll talk to Landry about this momentarily. The NFL is filled with guys like Jim Schwartz and Vic Fangio who will never be head coaches again in their lives. So what do? When you do something well, a la CJ Stroud year one, they spend an entire offseason as a defense trying to shut you down. They're going to poke holes through what you do. They're going to make you uncomfortable. And it's very different when you catch people by surprise with how good and dialed in you are right away. It's another thing after the league has time to adjust to you in one offseason.
So let's bring in Landry Locker, host of The Locker Room on YouTube, covering all things Houston Texans. Follow him on X at Landry Locker. He joins us via the Progressive guest line. Okay, Landry, so we just tried to poke holes in what has been a very exciting offseason. I'm sure everyone down there in Houston is just giddy, over the moon to start this season. But let's try to temper our expectations for just a little bit, because coming into last season, if you were going to say the Texans are a Super Bowl contender, people would have gave you the side eye. But now it seems like that is just okay to be in that boat. Where do you land on the Houston Super Bowl bandwagon as we get close to start year two with CJ Stroud?
The Super Bowl bandwagon, I mean, I think it's decent value if you're looking to make a bet. But I think you guys made y'all's analysis before you had me on. I think it was excellent. And I think there's a tendency to overreact. And we actually talked about this with the general manager, Nick Caserio, last week, where, like, let's say that the Texans last year, let's say Indianapolis doesn't drop that pass and they score the touchdown and the Texans season ends up concluding. Or let's say they don't. And then let's say that the Jags don't wet the bed against the Titans in the final week of the season. You're talking about either the Texans missing the playoffs, or you're talking about the Texans having to go to Buffalo and play on Tuesday instead of hosting the Cleveland Browns. So I do tend to think that because we saw them put that thumping on the Browns, there's a little bit of an overreaction. And I actually think, because last year the Jags, the win total heading into the season was 11.5. And I was like, man, that's ridiculous. Like, we're overreacting there. And this year I look at the Colts and I see the Colts at 3.5 to 1 or whatever they are. They might have gone down to 3 to 1. And you talk about all the teams in the division getting better. I do think, like, the there is kind of a little bit of an overreaction with the Texans, but I do think they have a high floor. I just don't know if I'm ready to say that they have a Super Bowl ceiling yet.
And now, with all that said, Landry, there's no reason you shouldn't be excited about the offseason. It's one of the best offseasons we've had in recent memory, where an organization realizes the window with the rookie quarterback playing the way he did CJ Stroud, but also the contract. Let's surround him with everything possible here. They add Diggs. They add Mixon. And I think underrated is what this defense is going to look like, more of an imprint of what D'Amico Ryans wants to do. When you add how things went last year to this offseason of adding all these key guys, I mean, where do you see them making the biggest jump? Is it the offense taking another step, or is it this defense?
I think it's defense. I think it's Will Anderson. He's put on 15 pounds. He was hurt last year. He talked about getting kind of roughed up and physically dominated against Baltimore. So he's put on 15 pounds. He looks great. They're putting the pads on tomorrow, so we'll get a better look at that. Danielle Hunter on the other side, I think you can make a case that they might have one of the three best edge combos in the league. And I think the other thing about the offseason, on top of just the names they brought in, is the fact that they have a lot of guys who are under 25 that are inevitably going to get better. And CJ, Will Anderson, probably Tank Dell, Derek Stingley, when he's on the field last year, he was AFC Player of the Month, I think, in December, our Defensive Player of the Month. So I think it's the defense is where I think they're going to get better. It's going to be interesting to see if they can run the ball on offense. They brought in Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon last week, he wasn't at practice on Saturday. We figured it was a Veterans Day off, but he was not there again today. D'Amico Ryan says nothing to worry about, but they're definitely going to have to be able to run the ball better than they did last year. I think that would be the one thing to keep an eye on.
100% going to have to run the ball. And you look at the defenses they play the first 4 weeks of the season, Landry, Indy, Chicago, Minnesota, Jacksonville, then Buffalo's going to be a challenge. Then they go on the road. Week 6, they face the Patriots. And week 7 at Lambeau Field, that's the first time that they're underdogs, at least on the early lines all season long. Of course, the Bills, they get them at home. We'll see how Buffalo starts their season. I could see that one flipping back to the Bills being a small favorite. But it looks like there is a favorable path to begin the year. But then, Landry, you look at the back half of this schedule. At Dallas on Monday night, at the Jets on Thursday night, short week traveling to MetLife. They go on the road to face the Chiefs and the Ravens back-to-back weeks down the stretch. It feels like it's a tough first-place schedule, and I think as we talked about earlier, they are now the hunted, not the hunter. I think that second half is where I could see maybe some slippage.
Yeah, the back end, the December is interesting because they're going to be coming off a bye, so they're going to get the Dolphins coming off a bye. Baltimore is going to have to play them on a short week on Christmas. So that's a little bit, I guess, if knowing that you have to play those teams no matter what, I guess you can make a case that it's better to get Baltimore on a short week coming to your place and Miami coming off the bye. I'm with you on the schedule, but for me, I think it's as much about routine because last year, the Texans, their first 16 games were all noon Sunday kicks. So all 16 before they flexed that Indy game were noon Sunday. So they were 100% in routine. They had a routine going. Now they have 6 primetime games. You look at Indianapolis, their first 10 games of the season are all going to be noon Sunday games. And so I think that's another thing to keep an eye on. I don't know that these guys are going to be like the lights are going to be too bright for them, but I do think that there's no doubt that it's an advantage to have, you know, the same kick time 16 straight weeks. And I think that's another advantage they had. And that's not even factoring in what you say about the opponents, but I do think that's going to be something to keep an eye on how they handle that, because it's easy for a first year coach to have a team used to a routine when it's the exact same for 99% of the season.
Landry, I know you've been out to camp a few times now since things opened up. Early returns on Stephon Diggs, you know, he was happy in Minnesota until he wasn't, and he was happy in Buffalo until he wasn't. What are the early thoughts you've seen from Stephon Diggs so far?
Wide receiver 1, to me. I mean, if you didn't like know what Nico Collins and Tank Dell did last year, I know that's been kind of a thing with fantasy coming up and stuff like that, but him and CJ, they're on the same page. We got to talk to him today. He's on his best behavior, Diggs, but I mean, him and CJ seem to already have chemistry. So I was wondering, like, do I want to take any of these Texans in fantasy football? And it's one of those situations where who's going to be one. I feel pretty safe in saying, like, a few days into camp, he looks like by far the best wide receiver on the squad.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about Nico Collins, who signed like a $100 million deal or something in the offseason. Yeah. It was, and then you still bring in Stephon Diggs, Danielle Hunter, the other big addition for the Texans this summer. It's becoming an embarrassment of riches. And Landry, I guess that's where we'll end this segment. You know, just put it in perspective. A couple years ago, right, fighting to be the worst team in the NFL, and now 2 years later, the turnaround. And it's something we see a lot, right? We go worst to first. There's always a worst to first team in the NFL, but the question is carrying it over, right? You go worst to first, and now you carry that momentum over into the following season. You make all of these additions. You go worst to first to now Super Bowl. Put that in context, what the last 2 years has been like covering this Texans team.
It's been football hell. I mean, it was literally football hell from 2020 to about like 2022. I don't think you say it happens, but you know, it's you have a guy who you think's a franchise quarterback. He demands a trade. You have two head coaches who probably have no business being in the NFL. Oh, by the way, that quarterback who wants to be traded can't be traded because he has all the off-field allegations. You have $50 million dead cap. You don't have first-round picks in 2021 because Bill O'Brien functioned like someone who didn't give a damn about the future of the organization. And then you kind of luck out because you go back and look at it, like, had Deshaun Watson been tradable, I mean, they might have drafted Zach Wilson or Trey Lance or Mac Jones or something like that. But because he wasn't tradable and none of these teams that had multiple draft picks like the Jets or anything, teams that might have been interested, you hold on to him and you're basically just paying him not to play. Then you finally trade him. Then you wanted Bryce Young and you end up winning that game. Some people say the win, loss, whatever the hell that was against the Colts. And then you happen to get C.J. Stroud. You use that draft equity that you had for Watson to trade up for Will Anderson. You get Tank Dell. And now all of a sudden it's a pile of players. It really has been like one of the most fascinating things. And I think a lot of credit is deserved. But I also think, as we know in the gambling world, sometimes that luck can help you as well. And I think they just had the perfect combination of luck, execution, and it's wild.
Landry Locker, not to be confused with Landry Lucker. Great stuff as always, pal. Covers the Texans on the Locker Room, the YouTube show. Follow him on social media at Landry Locker. Good luck this season, sir.
I appreciate y'all.
I'm going to talk on the other side why maybe there's a player on the Texans at 60-1 we should consider in an awards market. That's next on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hey, we're back. And so is the VSIN NFL betting guide. It's out now. The new college football guide drops August 1st. Only VSIN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for college and the NFL. Our experts provide profiles of every team, advanced stats, trends, power ratings, plus best bets on future season win totals. Sign up before the end of July. Receive both guides and full VSIN Pro access to our daily pro picks. The football special discount ends July 31st. Don't wait. VSIN.com/subscribe. Sign up today. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. I'd like to thank our first guest, Landry Locker, host of The Locker Room. Talked a little Texans with us in our last segment. Coming up next on the other side of our following break, Brooks Austin, SI.com Director of Recruiting. Very excited to switch gears to college football in just a few moments. But let's wrap up what we heard from Landry. I'll give you my long shot take on the Texans this year and who I would be willing to bet right now in one of the futures markets. That market is Offensive Player of the Year, and we talked a little bit about this guy during the last segment. It's Stephon Diggs, and it's a very simple handicap to me. This is an award that has been the non-quarterback award. So take all the quarterbacks, don't even think about them. Usually there's not as many of them priced in the top half of the market. It's mostly receivers and running backs, but I saw a couple, you know, Mahomes and Burrows and Lamars and Jalen Hurts are all above this guy that I'm about to give you, and that's Stephon Diggs, currently priced at 60-1 in this market. His best year in Buffalo was his first year. Everything was sunshine and rainbows, and it was impressive. And then things went steadily down from there. I'm not saying the same trajectory will happen with Stephon Diggs, but I would not be shocked if we look back on his tenure in Houston and his first year is his best year. And I think that puts him in a very advantageous position to be one of the front runners for this award if he can go back to his opening season that he had with the Bills.
So they brought in Stephon Diggs to be the number one, to help elevate C.J. Stroud, to build upon a great rookie year. And I think the initial glance at betting him in this market would be, well, there's a lot of mouths to feed in that offense. I actually think that's an argument for Stephon Diggs, because the way you have to cover him, you have to account for Nico Collins. You have to account for Tank Dell. There are other weapons. Joe Mixon in the backfield can catch the ball. There are other weapons in this offense. Defenses have to be honest with how they're going to, you know, approach them, because if you focus too much on Diggs, one of the other guys can beat you. And because Diggs is a veteran, because he's a number one, I do think there is a world where he ends up being in the mix for this award late because they're going to go to him so often. And also, what I said with Landry is very true. He was happy in Minnesota until he wasn't. He was happy in Buffalo until he wasn't. Part of bringing him in and being that number one, you have to work every day to make him happy. That is the goal here for the Texans. You make him happy by getting him the football.
Yeah, and unlike the next awards market we're going to talk about, Offensive Player of the Year does not have a defined structure. It could be a running back. It could be a receiver. It could be a team that didn't win that many games. It could be a guy that just had such a good of a year, you just can't deny him the award. That makes it much harder to predict. I cannot eliminate as many people off of the list as I can in the next market we're going to discuss, which is Coach of the Year. This is my favorite market to bet pre-flop. Why? There's never a favorite. There's always a glob of coaches at the top. Usually there's a few guys that are priced slightly better than others, but let's be honest. You're going to look at the screen right now with the graphic on it. From 1 down to the bottom of the list, between 8 and 22 to 1. That's not a big gap between basically 15 guys on that list. And I think, unlike other markets, I can eliminate a lot of coaches in this market. For example, let me pull up my notes here. There they are. The average preseason win total for the last 15 coaches of the year, 7.5. That's the average preseason win total. So any coach on a team with a win total of 9 or 10 or 11, probably not going to win this award. It's probably going to be a coach with a win total of 8 or 7 or 6 or, God willing, lower than that. That's just right out of the gate, right? You can probably eliminate guys like Robert Saleh. What's the Jets' win total? 10.5? You can probably eliminate someone like Kyle Shanahan, who's not even on this top of the board. You could probably eliminate someone who else is on this list with a high win total. D'Amico Ryans' number is pretty high. You could probably eliminate, I don't know, you throw LaFleur's name in there with the Packers. I don't know what the Packers' win total is. It's probably higher than 9. Like, to me, anything over 9.5, you're not winning Coach of the Year. No,
the only way teams, right, the only way teams with high expectations their coach can win Coach of the Year is if they somehow are close to undefeated very late in the season, and there's just such a large gap between them and the next team with the most wins. That's the only way. Like, I do think there's a world where Sirianni, because of how things went last year, if Philly is an absolute dynamo at 40-1, makes sense, but it is a long of long shots in this type of market. And by the way, I'll add, this is a very fluid market. It is constantly readjusting, giving you opportunities throughout the year.
Agreed.
So last year I started with Tomlin 22-1. I then added Stefanski 14-1. I also hedged Stefanski 14-1 with D'Amico Ryans 18-1. I felt I had this market cornered at those numbers.
I love this market.
And because things jumped week to week, I cashed with Stefanski.
Nice job. So I just told you that the average preseason win total for the last 15 winners has been 7.5. So right there, you should be gravitating towards teams with win totals of 6, 7, or 8. That, to me, is the concentration. I'll give you the next criteria that really makes this award not easy to handicap, but easier than the other award markets. Nearly half of the last 15 winners have been first-year coaches. You weight those guys significantly more than any other coach, any other situation.
Well, think about why they're there. They're there because this team underperformed, right? It's not just that they were bad, but the expectations were they were going to be better than they were. If there are marked improvements that we can see on the football field, whether it be close games, hanging with tough teams, or just being better, there is an opportunity for coaches there. That's why I like a team on a situation where I don't know if people want to really put their money on. I do like a first-year coach in this market.
I like 2 first-year coaches and 1 non-first-year coach. I'll give you the first-year coaches I like first. Mike McDonald, 22-1.
Yes.
Well, I mean, this should be the first bet. It's the second bet I made in this market, but it was one of the first 2 bets. It was basically one right after the other. And Seattle's win total, 7.5, juice to the over. They're expecting them to overachieve. The price for Seattle to win the NFC West is plus 750. If the Seahawks upend the Niners and win the NFC West in Mike McDonald's first year as head coach, that 22-1 is cashing. Like, it just there's no other way around it. And last year was an anomaly with the Stefanski thing because of the quarterback situation. That's probably not going to happen this year. DeMeco Ryans should have probably won that award in a normal year, and it was because he took a rookie quarterback to the top of a division that they were not expected to win. So Mike McDonald is one. The other one is the pretty much the exact same mold, Dave Canales in Carolina. If Carolina makes the playoffs at 5-1, Dave Canales is going to be considered for this award. If they win the division at 12-1, he is winning this award hands down, and you're still getting better than that to win it for Canales at 18-1.
If Bryce Young looks like an average quarterback, Dave Canales has a chance to win this award. He is the one that I really like in this market.
That was the first bet that I made was Canales. And then second was McDonald.
The thing about Canales, I just watched a whole clip. I can't remember which player it was talking about an assistant under Pete Carroll got made fun of by players and assistants and whoever because they paid so much attention to detail. They made sure every practice dummy was in the exact spot that it needed to be, and people made fun of him. Then finally a coach pulled everyone aside and was like, you guys don't get it. That guy understands every details matters if we're going to do this right. That's who Dave Canales is as a coach. We just saw what he did with Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield was this close to being out of football. Right? He goes and plays on short notice with the Rams 2 years ago. It was at Thursday night, Monday night football, one of the primetime games. They end up winning. He gets a second life, goes down to Tampa with Dave Canales, and all of a sudden that team that looked like it was left for dead post-Tom Brady is in the postseason.
Winning a postseason game.
Beating the Eagles. Okay.
Looking good.
Dave Canales.
I dropped 40 in that game or something?
He had no run game. He had no run. He had Rashad White at running back. He had good older veteran receivers, but he turned Baker Mayfield into something a year ago. And I like Baker, but let's be real, you have to coach him up. And that's what Canales was brought into Carolina to do. Coach up Bryce Young. Milk whatever is in that as an athletic quarterback. Can he turn him into something? A guy we all thought was going to be the number one pick. He was the number one pick, and then he looked like he should have been a fourth round pick last year.
The other guy I like in this market is not a first-year coach. He's actually been a coach of this team for several years. I just think the roster's better, except for quarterback. This meets the criteria of what Stefanski was last year, and it's Kevin O'Connell.
Yeah, so I'm with you. That's one of the names I wrote down.
And again, if we're trying to emulate the prototype for this market, first-year coach Mike McDonald, Dave Canales, if you're trying to emulate the story that won last year, good roster, bad quarterback situation, the coach gets the credit for if that team does well, it's the Vikings, it's Kevin O'Connell. Those are the three bets I made in this market. McDonald, Canales, O'Connell, all north of 20-1. And we'll see where the chips fall when the season actually starts. We'll talk a little recruiting. Can't wait to get this guy's opinion on the other side. Brooks Austin, director of recruiting at SI.com. Next, college football, sharp money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
All right, we are back, and we are asking you to check out VSIN.com. Why? Because there's all kinds of goodies up there. Best bets, betting splits. I was on the betting splits page this morning trying to find a winner in baseball, but you don't need to do that. You know why? Because Adam Burke, Steve Mackin, and among other experts have got you covered. Log on to VSIN.com, subscribe, and check it out. All kinds of stuff. I even saw Nigel Seeley put up Olympic soccer predictions. I mean, you want it. You got it. It's all at your fingertips over at VSiN.com. I know USA is losing here to Germany. What is going on? I'll be honest. Are we going to not? We're $5 favorite to win Olympic gold, Dustin. What's going on with the men's basketball team here?
I think we're just falling victim to the Blitzkrieg again.
The Blitzkrieg. What happened against South Sudan then?
No, this
come
is
up
not
with some gimmick for them.
I don't understand this. Look, when you invent a sport. Well, actually, technically, Canada invented basketball.
Is that true?
I think Naismith was Canadian, but living in Kansas. I could be wrong about that. I'll Google it
for
later.
That's really impressive that you knew that off the top of my head. I'll be honest. You could have given me a million guesses. I never would have got Canada for creating basketball.
No. So, look, when you invent a sport, though, you should be the best at it. That should be the rules. And I think the SEC thinks they invented college football, and we'll touch on that now with Brooks Austin.
Brooks Austin on the phone? We do. SI.com director of recruiting. He joins us on the Progressive guest line. Follow him on social media at Brooks Austin. BA and Brooks, I'm excited to get your take on what's going on in the recruiting landscape across college football. But let's start with your other gig, the Dogs Daily lead editor. Obviously, that's referring to the Georgia Bulldogs. Where you were front and center for SEC Media Day. It's going to be a weird year in the SEC. It's going to be a weird year across all of college football. What were your takeaways from Media Day? Georgia, obviously, still the top dog in the SEC, but is that gap dwindling? All the tumult and the upheaval at Bama, what's going on in the SEC noteworthy heading into the year?
I think first and foremost, the removal of divisions will create what we – I don't think any more remaining like top dog where there's like clear cut. That team's so much better than everybody else because, like, for instance, Georgia, everybody kind of looks at Georgia. Is Georgia dog this year? Georgia's going to have to go on the road to Texas, Alabama, and Ole Miss this year. Oh, and by the way, play Tennessee and Clemson. Like, that's on the schedule this year. So if they survive that, yes, and go on to win a national title, they might be the best college football team ever considering the slate. But everyone across the conference has that going on. You look at Florida's schedule, it's really, really tough. You look at Texas and Oklahoma's schedule the next 2 years, it's fairly tough. With what they got coming to the conference. I think the removal of divisions will really remove this kind of power gap we've seen, this power dynamic we've seen over the last couple of, you know, probably decades really with the transition from Alabama being that quote-unquote top dog to Georgia now seemingly being that top dog. But in terms of the power gap, I don't know how much of a real difference there is between 1 to 2, but I don't think there really has to be because 2 through 6 right now in this conference is really ultra competitive, and number one's got to see about almost all of those really competitive teams this year.
Now, Brooks, Carson Beck is back. And, like, full disclosure, I'm a New York Giants fan in the NFL. I want Carson Beck to be the next quarterback of my New York Giants. However, when I look at this season and you look at this offense with what's returning, it jumps out to me that there is no Ladd McConkey, there is no Brock Bowers, and those were two go-to guys in critical downs for Carson Beck. How much of not having those two guys do you see that making an impact on Beck's season this year?
You know, it's interesting. If you look at the history of Mike Bobo as an offensive coordinator, he's kind of always found one or two guys to feed the rock to. If you go back to his days at, like, Colorado State, for example. Colorado State put out 2 third-round draft picks at the wide receiver position during his time there because they just kept getting fed the rock. They had almost 1,200 yards receiving and went out to be drafted out of the Mountain West Conference. So this guy's history as a coordinator, and it's why he's worked so well in the college ranks, and particularly, to be honest with you, I don't think he has very much interest in pro ranks because he has been very much so, hey, who are my best players this year? Who has developed into those alphas? Let's figure out ways to get those guys ball, you know, opportunities after the catch. And last year, yes, it was Bowers and it was McConkey, but those guys were very, very injured last year. Those guys were in and out of the lineup consistently. And if you look back at those games, for example, like Tennessee, neither of those guys was 100% at all. Ladd didn't play at all in that football game. Bowers was relatively hobbled in that ball game as well. Well, all of a sudden, this Dylan Bell guy pops out, and he has over 100 yards and a pass touchdown as well. And he's making plays, and everybody's like, hey, who's this Dylan Bell guy? Well, that's a byproduct of your quarterback as well, but also your coordinator being able to really designate and design his opportunities for each unique, specific offensive talent. And honestly, guys, in my opinion, that's what coordinating is about. When I can see a coordinator do that, I know he's really, really in tune with not only his roster, but his abilities as a play caller.
We're joined by Brooks Austin, SI.com Director of Recruiting Daily Lead Editor for Dogs Daily. Find him on X at Brooks Austin BA. And Brooks, let's widen the scope a little bit. We've got an expanded playoff in college football. It's a new landscape across the board. I'm expecting at least one, maybe two, three lost teams to be in the college football playoff. Who knows? Maybe Georgia's one of them. It feels like to me you're going to see a lot of new blood, and I think that's going to make betting college football this year, especially from a futures perspective, very difficult. Do you think there's a team maybe at the top of the list as we're putting some national championship odds on the screen now? Teams like Georgia, Ohio State, Texas, Oregon, of course, Alabama and Ole Miss, LSU and the SEC. Are some of these teams at a disadvantage because of the expanded field? Because usually they're expected to be at the top, and they are at the top. But now you open up the field to so many more contenders. Are there some of these top teams that need to be a little worried?
I mean, if you look at, like, just the shake of how everything went down with the schedule, boys, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Oregon nabbed both Michigan and Ohio State on the schedule this year. in their first Big Ten kind of, you know, opportunity at the conference. I don't think that's necessarily ideal, despite the fact that I think Dan Lanning's roster and his coaching ability and the quarterback play, what we expect from Dylan Gabriel, should be more than okay. I think there's still questions about, you know, what's going on at Texas. Is anybody overlooking what LSU got has got going on? Because, you know, Garrett Nussmeier seems to be at least a very competent quarterback. I'm not saying he's going to be what Jaden Daniels was last year, but do they have to be defensively on the other end? They spent about $4 million on their defensive staff alone this last offseason. So when you get really big money players and a talented roster like that at LSU, I'm not saying, but I'm saying, you know what I'm saying? They could be one of these teams on the outside that everybody's not looking at this year. But if you talk about futures, how about this one, okay? Look at the landscape of college football right now. Ohio State's got what looks to be a roster that they've got the chips pushed in all on. Ole Miss the same. Maybe Alabama's without Jalen Milroe next year. He goes to the draft. Georgia's going to have about 25 guys on their roster. What's going on with Kay Klubnik at Clemson, right? Okay, look at Tennessee next year. They're going to have a year two starter, all right, in Nico Iamalieva, and a year five guy in Josh Heupel fully having that roster back. And, oh, by the way, probably on the backslide of those NCAA sanctions. So maybe they'll finally be able to get back to the roster limits, you know, without any type of restrictions from the Jeremy Pruitt era. If you want to grab a future, 2025 is about as open as it gets. And the only constant, the only thing that looks like it's going to be on stable ground at the quarterback position in that year, it's probably Tennessee.
All right, about 2 minutes here, Brooks. I don't want to get too caught up in the hype here, but I kind of already in the tornado that is Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss. And the fact that they have a three-year starter back in Jackson Dart at quarterback, they returned three receivers, they had South Carolina transfer Antoine Wells, and the defense has been completely overhauled via the transfer portal. Do you think Lane Kiffin is serious enough as a head coach to get this team into the playoffs with all the talent they added?
I think he's certainly good enough of a coach. Seriousness is not anything that I would put in the description bio of Lane Kiffin. However, I'll tell you who is serious. Obviously, that booster base, that's a $25 million roster with what they did and what they retained. It's not everybody looks at the additions, but you hit the nail on the head. They got a bunch of guys that turned down, you know, third to fifth round evaluations to come back to school. That does not happen freely. The guys like Trey Harris's, they don't come back to college, you know, without being paid. So that booster base certainly thinks Lane Kiffin is serious. And this is 100% an all-in approach this year out there in Oxford.
Yeah, I think the college there's two teams in the SEC, Tennessee and Ole Miss. Those are the two teams that I'm really targeting in the SEC because I'm trying to find plus money prices to make the playoffs, Brooks, because I think, you know, you get a lot of these teams, the teams at the top of the list. I don't know if the books have fully adjusted to the expanded playoff field just yet. And I think there might be a couple of extra meat, you know, a little extra meat on the bone there with some of those yeses to make the playoffs.
I think Missouri is so safe of all of these teams in the conference. Just look at the slate, man. It's like, hey, can y'all beat Alabama on the road? And even if you don't, can y'all just win these games that you're going to be favored on? I'm serious. Look at the schedule. They didn't get Georgia. They don't get Ole Miss. They play Alabama. They didn't get Texas. They have to play Oklahoma, but it's at home. Like, they got the draw of draws in a year where they return everybody and the quarterback, and they probably have the best receiver in college football.
And they're 5-0 to start. Well, 4-0 to start. Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College.
I mean,
College,
walk Vandy out the gate better.
And then UMass.
4-0.
They better be 5-1 after that UMass game. I mean, maybe they knock off A&M. Great stuff, Brooks. You got to hang for one more segment, bud?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
All right, let's see. You always ask them on air because when they say no, then everyone gets to hear them say no, and it's not just me behind the scenes. All right, great stuff. We'll get a little more. I want to ask you about my Nittany Lions. I'm a Big Ten guy. More Brooks Austin on the other side.
Oh,
Sharp Money.
You're not going to like me after that.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
July ending with a bang. UFC 304 is not just one, but two titles on the line. Get your own crown. Jump in on all the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of USC. Download the app now. Use code VSIN. That's code VSIN. New customers get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours. are back here on Sharp Money. Brooks Austin hanging out for one more segment. We want to not only thank Brooks, but also thank his wife for allowing him to stay on for one segment or one extra segment here on the Progressive Guest Line. Also, Brooks, I want to make sure we plug the Film Network on YouTube. You want to tell us something special about that project you're working on?
Yeah, man, we do a lot of college football talk. We're live Monday through Thursday, 8 to 10 o'clock on the East Coast over on YouTube. You just check out the Film Guy Network. I think we do it as good or better than anybody else in the college football media space. And we do it from my basement. It's actually a really cool spot. I would put it on par visually with literally anybody creating digital content on the internet today.
Brooks is being a little humble. There aren't many people who can deep dive college tape the way he does. He does that.
I need some of that.
He also covers all the regular stories, and he's always all over Georgia just because the proximity, and he covers them for Dogs Daily. Brooks does a freaking awesome job. And he mentioned Missouri before he went to break. I want to touch on them with you, Brooks, because – one, Eli Drinkwitz has proven to be a really good football coach. He maybe doesn't always have the players to hang with everyone in the SEC, but he's 16-8 against the spread over the last two seasons. That is tremendous. And this is a team that brings back Brady Cook at quarterback, over 3,300 yards. They bring back a whole receiving core, including Luther Burden III, who will be a top five pick in the draft. And then somehow they get better at running back after Schrader moves on. They get Marcus Carroll from Georgia State, Nate Noel from App State. You mentioned it before, no divisions in the SEC this year. Talent-wise, coaching-wise, how do you power rank Missouri in the SEC this year?
I think the power ranking to me is kind of like it's a secondary discussion with regards to them specifically because of what we talked about before the break. They have a very unique opportunity to run the slate on a very, very easy schedule. We could look at them being 11-1 and potentially playing for an SEC championship game. And not really knowing, losing that football game is still making the college football playoff because they got there, or even just surviving this SEC slate with two losses, they still have an opportunity to sit at home during the SEC championship weekend and still end up voted into the college football playoff. But I think most importantly with Eli, it's been the rare combination of being able to recruit on the high school level at an elite level like a Luther Burden, while also being to balance it out with elite transfers like you mentioned right there at the running back room, especially on the defensive side of the football. You look at their two deep, they are really kind of just heading out and finding really, really good starters that are already proven commodities on the Division I ranks and bringing them in as opposed to trying to recruit at an elite level in the SEC. It's hard to recruit inside that top 10 that it requires to win that conference on a perennial basis. The schools that have been able to do it are name and few. It's you know, the Georgias, the Floridas, the Alabamas, the LSUs. Those are the perennial powerhouses on the trail when all things are run right. Missouri is not going to be one of those programs. Eli knows that. They have to hit home runs with the ones that they're able to sign. They signed a five-star edge rusher, Williams Winery, who I would imagine is going to be a situational pass rusher for them this year. But they also balance it out with taking a guy like Darius Smith, who was a really, really high-ceiling football player that was unable to crack the lineup at a place like Georgia that's now going to get some burn up there in Missouri. So it's really this elite balance of difference makers in the high school recruiting ranks while also maintaining starter abilities out of the transfer portal.
So it sounds crazy, but maybe Missouri's best chance to make the playoffs is not to play in the SEC title game. You get blown out in that game, it just diminishes
correct
your chances. It's an interesting way to look at it. And again, the expanded playoff, I kind of liken it to Thanksgiving dinner. And here's the metaphor I'll go with here. So the sports books expect to have a certain amount of people come over for Thanksgiving dinner, but there's, you know, not enough food to go around like that. I'm not sure if there's going to be more or less meat on the bone with some of these yes, no to make the college football playoff odds as we get closer to the end of the season and some of the past start to emerge. It's very intriguing this year with the expanded field.
Well, it's not factoring in the Big 12 well, Brooks. That's what I think. Someone's got to win the Big 12. Dare I say?
Somebody's got to win the Big 12, but I will tell you this. Greg Sankey will rip that conference up from its roots and go create its own if a conference championship loss costs a college football entrance now in the 12-team playoff. There is no way he will allow his second-best team that earned the right to play in December, that first weekend of December, in that football game, in that conference championship game, the SEC championship game, which has been a pseudo-national championship game. Greg Sankey will take his 16 teams, he will take all their balls, and he will go home. They will not allow that to happen, I promise you right now.
Well, let's talk about a team that is usually involved in the playoff, and they were last year. And now they have a new head coach. There's a whole new era. You were at SEC Media Days. What was the vibe with the Kalen DeBoer era kicking off in Hoover, Alabama?
Ooh.
What were the early returns? I saw a lot of his press conference. Look, this guy has won at every level, but he does have a bit of an uphill battle with the amount of players they lost, the new players he's bringing into to Tuscaloosa. Mm-hmm. What did you get from a vibe from the Kalen DeBoer era in Hoover?
Well, I'm glad you used the word vibe because I've been cultivating this take, and I kind of gave an appetizer to it on our show, and I'm going to try to build and cultivate it some more here. I think it's so great that he is so the antithesis of Nick Saban, because every single player in that locker room, every single person in that region, every single person in that organization was just waiting for some poser to walk in there and try to be like Nick Saban, to try to do something that Nick Saban does, or try to walk around carrying himself like Nick Saban does, or even as much as try to install an offense the way that Nick Saban does, or anything resulting to the way that the GOAT did it. Everyone wanted them, myself included, wanted them to draft somebody within the Saban tree. Ooh, go get Lanning. Go get Sark. Try to throw the bag at Kirby. Do whatever it takes. Get somebody from the Saban tree. And then they go outside the Saban tree, and everybody's like, whoa, this outsider is going to come in here and do it his way. Well, yeah, because you know what the place needed after 19 years of being ran like a dictator vigilante style? Maybe somebody who don't do it that way. Maybe somebody who lets the media in for 35 minutes a day. So much so that the media now all of a sudden loves this guy. Ooh, that's a neat little prospect. Okay, all right, this guy hasn't been able to recruit his whole entire life. Never has. Never really prioritized it. Well, maybe because he's been in the Midwest the whole time and ain't jacked for football players out there. Give him the five-hour radius that is Tuscaloosa, Alabama, where within a car ride, he could get to Atlanta. He could get to New Orleans. He could get to Mobile. He could take his butt up to Memphis. Guess what? There's dudes out there. There ain't nobody in Tacoma, Washington, folks. There ain't no football players up there. So the guy comes down here, and the SLB can recruit. I am flabbergasted.
Wow. Brooks Austin.
You didn't
incubate that take. That take is fully grown, my friend.
Amen to that one.
Amen to that.
That boy cooked.
That boy is cooked. Speaking of cooked, we've got about 2 minutes left. I've got to ask you about my Nittany Lions because I want to know what you see with Drew Aller. Because here's what I see. I see a really talented quarterback where the shackles were on last year. I think the shackles come off this year. New OC, love the guy they brought in from Kansas. I can't pronounce his last name, but I'm excited to watch him cook as well because I think there's some excitement with what Penn State has. But if I'm unsure about the quarterback, I can't be sure about their overall ceiling for success. What do your eyes tell you about Drew Aller heading into this season?
No weapons, Jack. That's what my eyes tell me. I watched that spring game, and it wasn't even about the lack of completions or the lack of ability to drive the ball downfield. You bring in a new OC, that's fine. The ingredients did not change. In fact, I'm pretty sure, if my memory serves me, their best weapon left them this spring because he saw what I see, which is, hey, man, we might have a dude that can make every throw in the world, but we can't get open, and that's a problem. And they might be able to run the football, and they've always been able to run the football. And James Franklin's good enough to make them an 8-9 win team in the Big Ten, and that's great. And it'll keep him being paid almost $8 million a year the rest of his time there, and he'll keep flirting with USC every time it gets open, and they won't take him, and they'll take a Lincoln Riley every time, and he'll get a pay bump out of it. But until they figure out how to drive the ball downfield without their media asking, hey, do you ever think about just chunking it up? No, we don't just chunk it up because we don't have dudes until they get dudes. And it's a really hard thing to do because Ohio State's in their backyard. And guess what? Everybody loses to those guys on the trail. Everyone, especially at the weaponry position. So until the weapons get there, I have a hard time thinking that you're not going to look constipated against a real defense. And there's a lot of real defenses now in the Big Ten.
Yeah, they brought over Julian Fleming, of course, who played for Ohio State last year. But the rest of the mix, I agree with you, Brooks. It is bare bones at best. Not bare bones is the analysis you bring to the table, my friend. I just subscribed to the YouTube channel. I am excited to watch it grow this year and to continue to watch your stuff. Brooks Austin, SI.com, Director of Recruiting, Dogs Daily, Lead Editor, and the Film Network on YouTube. We appreciate the extra segment, pal.
Hey, ain't no doubt. Hey, just don't follow me up with Nick Saban like Paul Feinbaum did. Please don't do that.
You got it. We're just going to talk a little bit of other stuff on the other side with Chicago sports host Mark Kamen. That's coming next on Chart Money.